Well, thank you so much to Vicky for introducing me and to Gail for inviting me. And it's a great turnout. I was not sure with the weather what was going to happen tonight. So thank you for braving all the icy roads. And as Vicky said, I was raised in South Africa, but I've been here almost 24 years. So my parenting has mostly happened here. So even though the accent is not that southern, I am fully American. The only thing that isn't American about me is my DNA and my accent. But we love America. We're very privileged to have been able to raise our kids here. And my oldest son is 28, so I've been doing this empty nest, well, not empty nest, but the adult relating for 10 years. So to begin with, the first, it's not really, we don't really parent our adult children, so I like to call this more relating to our adult kids. So is it talking okay? You look a little worried over there. Okay. Oh, okay. So I was raised in South Africa. My mom's actually from England, so I have a little bit of a British background. We were probably raised in the British culture there. And we had three children in South Africa born, and then we moved here in 94. My daughter was 15 months, and then Bruce and Ross were 3 and 4 years old. So that was an adventure. We arrived in February. It was probably the coldest February ever recorded in America. And it was all fine. You know, we came with 3 suitcases and money. And then, you know, we took about a week to get ourselves settled. Then my husband started the business, and I was stuck at home with these three children. And we lived in an apartment in Kennesaw because we didn't know anybody, and Dion's bank accountant had said, oh, well, you're like Kennesaw, it's like a little village. And so we went there, and, you know, you don't know anything or anybody at that stage. But, you know, I'm very glad that I had that first year especially, because I just completely focused on my children. And, you know, I had been running a ladies' ministry in South Africa, and I'd run 3 or 4 different Bible studies with young moms and my husband's business partner's wives. And so I was so busy then, I came here, and all I had was these three children. And I remember the Lord just telling me, you know, this is your focus, this is your full-time ministry. So I did that. I didn't really have much option before that. So I threw myself into that. And, you know, in those early years, and then when we moved into Neely Farm with Vicky, our lives really ran around our children, and I'm so glad I did that in those days, because now my kids are older and I still have a relationship with them and I have no regrets. But today, when my goal of this evening is to let you leave feeling very encouraged and full of hope, I would love you to try very much not to beat up on yourselves while I'm talking or say, oh, I shouldn't have done this, or have any regrets, because we women are very bad about doing that. So I would love you to just try and focus on, you know, when you sometimes go into a store, they ask you to check your baggage in. And so I'd love you to kind of imagine yourselves checking your baggage at the door and dropping all your guilt and trying to listen with clear, you know, clear mind tonight, where you can really enjoy what I have to say. You know, the reality of the season is that we have reached a season where our hormones are changing, which doesn't help a lot of stuff. Our husbands are at the point of either slowing down with their pace, and you know, we're just not always prepared for the season. And I think we were talking at our table a little earlier, there's not much information about the season. So, you know, when you go into the first season of having babies, you have baby showers and everybody's giving you advice, and there's books and all those things that are going on, so you kind of feel prepared and supported. And then you go through all the schools, just a crazy blur, and then suddenly your kids go to college, but there's nobody prepares you for that saying goodbye to your kids in the dorm room, whether it's going to college or if they're going off to get married. And I think that we're pretty bad as society of not actually realizing this is a really big scenario that we're going into. And so we need to be patient with ourselves. And many times your marriage has also gone through a lot of pause because, you know, you've been so busy with the kids and your husband's gone traveling and doing the things. So what you really need to do is rekindle your marriage and find each other's friendship again. And, you know, for men, when their kids go off to college, you know, they're like, oh, well, that's one less person to have in the home, and they're almost pretty glad. But we are letting our heart go off to college or go off to, you know, working career. And so I think we experience it very differently to our husbands. And I think oftentimes also, just to add to that season, we as moms have put a lot of our career and a lot of ourself on hold so that we can focus on our kids. And, you know, maybe if you've been in the medical industry or even teaching or something, you've maybe even lost your certification because you just couldn't keep it up. And so you're kind of landing in this no man's land where you're not really parenting anymore and you definitely can't go back to your career, or they've hired people that are 30 years younger than you, which is pretty much happening. And so you land in this position. But so that's the downside of, as it were, the downstairs of it. But the reality is, and it's a wonderful opportunity to start doing what you really want to do, getting back into the hobbies, getting back into ministry, or getting back into the community. And so when we do our parenting, and I'll just give you a brief scenario of my book. You don't have to all buy it because you've probably a bit past that. But our scenario really is that when you... I go through the 7 steps of parenting your family, and you start in the younger stage where your kids are really young and you're very intentional about being protective and overly protective if in some case. And then you slowly move until when they turn 13, you do a coming of age ceremony. And it's interesting, we found there's a family that was involved with us whose son was at Perimeter, and they spoke about the ceremony called Raising a Modern Day Knight. And so we kind of latched onto it and left our, not very good at these things. And so we thought it was a great opportunity to actually acknowledge the fact that they're going through a change. You know, many other cultures do a whole event, bar mitzvah and all those other events. In Africa, they do a lot of really serious events when kids become 13. But in the Western culture, it's just something that happens, and now you don't know when does a person actually become an adult. For a boy, is it when they get drunk for the first time? Is it when they have sex for the first time? Or you know, when they get their first job, when is a boy an adult? I think for women it's a little bit easier because when they start their cycles, we pretty much acknowledge, okay, now you're a woman, and then they're just, you know, growing into that. But I think it's really important to kind of acknowledge the fact that they're 13. And then from 13 to 18, you're basically taking over this thing of handing over all the responsibility to them. And I explain how you have a basket as parents, and the idea is to put all these areas of responsibility into their basket before they turn 18. What we tend to do is that last year they're in their senior year of high school, and we tend to just drop everything. Oh, do you know how to do this and do you know how to do that? And then we become over panicky. Oh my gosh, you've never opened a bank account. You've never done this. You've never woken yourself. Do you know how to do that? And so it becomes much more stressed than it really needs to be. So in that senior year of high school, what you really are doing is polishing up, and you're gently saying, well, you know, you should be able to do this now, and kind of encouraging them. So in, you know, middle school, you start handing over responsibility of schoolwork and managing their own time, managing their own money, taking care of their bedroom, and obviously paying the consequences. So when our kids turned 18, when they graduated from college, we had a ceremony where we officially announced that parenting was over. Now, before you all say, oh my gosh, we never stop parenting, we explained to them, and because we've done it 4 times, like we've just finished it in August with my youngest son, they really understood what that meant. And basically what it is that you're no longer going to be their parent. You'll always be their parent, but you're not going to be parenting them. And this is a really big deal. And I think what you're doing is you're acknowledging an end of a season and the beginning of another season. And, you know, when you set out expectations for people, it's so much better to be able to follow them and have consequences. So we did a ceremony. We explained to them what it's going to look like. We did a blessing, a parent's blessing over them. It's really nice to spike it with a little gift. We happened to give our kids a little laptop because they were all going off to college, so it kind of rewinded into that. But what you're more doing is you're actually acknowledging that that season is over, and you welcome them into them being an adult in their own right. And that is, it's a little emotional. I, of course, find it pretty emotional, but it's a very important to demarcate that, as it were. So then what happens, how do we relate to our kids from then onwards? So when I was praying and just preparing for this, I was reminded about the big championship game, football game last Monday, which I'm going to try and say what I should. If I use the wrong terminology, please forgive me. I'm not that into football. But it's interesting because the Lord just reminded me of it. So at the end, Alabama was playing Georgia, obviously, and Alabama was going to have that kick, that free field goal. Is that a field goal? I'm looking at Vicky, please help me. So the score was tie, and it was for him to win. Remember that. And it wasn't the end of the game yet, and I thought, okay, this is his opportunity. You know, the field was set for him to win and become the hero of the night, and he missed. And I'm like, of course, I'm thinking, oh, this poor guy, and the mom must be crying in the stadium, you know. But anyway, the game went on. They went into overtime. Georgia got a field goal, and then it was very stressful. And then Alabama ended up winning with a touchdown, and it was so interesting. I just felt the Lord was saying, you know, that guy, whatever his name is, I'm sorry, I don't know. He missed the field goal, but his team came in and rescued him, and they actually ended up winning the game. And what I felt the Lord was trying to encourage you tonight is that you may feel like you've missed your opportunity to win at parenting, where you had that opportunity to bring this child through the goals and, you know, really win, and you missed it. But, you know, the Lord is very faithful. He's provided other team members that would come in and rescue your child and win the game for you. So it's sometimes not you, and you know, sometimes it's a youth pastor, sometimes it's somebody at college. We have great college ministries on campus these days, so never fear that the game is lost. You could still win, you know, through somebody else. So the two keys that I like to focus on with relating to our adult kids is that it's simple. It's two things. You pray for them and you be their friend. Now, I know that sounds very simple, but when you pray for them, you that can change the whole trajectory. So if you imagine they're going along a lane and, you know, this is the lane that they're choosing to go, but with the power of prayer, you can absolutely choose them, help them to go in a different trajectory. And I have several friends who have walked this road with their kids for a while, and the testimonies that we have, and I want to share some testimonies and stories at the end of how wonderfully faithful the Lord is in this situation. And I think especially a mother's prayers are something very valuable to the Lord. So I'll go into some more detail of that, but I'll focus on, I'll get into the friend rule because that's the very practical part. So we had a friend who was actually the best man in our wedding who lived in Boston, and he used to come and stay with us for weddings or holidays. And I realized that he was an adult in his own right, and I treated him very differently. And his name was Kim. And so we started the Kim rule with our kids. So when my sons went off to college and they came back, we said, okay, now we're going to apply the Kim rule. So the Kim rule was basically, if I wouldn't ask Kim to do something, or if I wouldn't tell Kim to do something, why would I ask my kids? So when Kim came down to work in the morning and he had a shirt on that looked like he hadn't ironed it, I would never think of saying, Kim, I think you should go back upstairs and iron your shirt. So why would I do it when my son is getting ready to go to church? Why would I do that? You see, that's where the friend rule came in. And so I would not go into Kim's room and start digging around for laundry because I knew he wouldn't be doing it. I would say, you know, Kim, I'm running a load of laundry today. If you want to bring anything, I don't mind throwing it in with me, you know, in my basket. If you think of a girlfriend that you have, like, so if my friendship with Vicky, if she comes to my house and she doesn't look like her pants maybe match her blouse, I would not think of saying, you know, did you forget to change your shirt before you came? There's just a respect and an honor that you have with a friend. And so if you can try and get into that mode with your kids after they turn 18, then it really helps because you start saying, would I ask Vicky this? And you say, no, I'd never ask Vicky that. Now, if Vicky came to me and said, I just bought this shirt, do you think it goes with these pants? I could say, well, you know, I wouldn't necessarily, but maybe if you put a scarf and pulled it together. You know, then she's asking my advice, it's very different. So when we did this, when we're going back to the ceremony, when we did the coming of age 18-year-old ceremony, we explained what this next season was going to look like. But what we also pointed out to our kids, that friendship is a two-way street. So it's not always me taking care of them. So when my friend Kim would come into the kitchen in the morning, if he saw the dishwasher was clean, he would empty it and then, you know, load his breakfast dishes in that because that's what a considerate adult does. Or if he saw that something had spilled on the floor, he'd get a broom. And I mean, fortunately, Kim was a perfect gentleman, so he was a great example. So we explained to our kids, now, if you come into the kitchen and the trash can is full, don't just keep stuffing things into it. You know, take it out and take it outside to the big trash can and put a fresh bag in because that's what adults do. You're aware of your surroundings. And so this friendship rule saved me a lot with my kids because I would immediately ask, okay, would I do this to my friend or would I have said that? Especially if with the guys, I mean, I'd say, would I have said this to Kim or would I have said this to my girlfriend? And so later on as our kids would, you know, they got married and I'd see them in church and my daughter would arrive and I'm like, oh my gosh, what has she done with her hair? You know, I would just be quiet because now if she came and said, hey, what do you think of my hairstyle? Because she actually went and got dreadlocks put in, which was just a bit shocking for me. But she did it. She felt the Lord had asked her to. She felt she's a sixth grade middle school teacher, and her husband run the youth ministry at the church. So she really wanted to connect with young people. And she just felt that, you know, that was a great opportunity to show them that she was like that. So she kind of warned me, and then we were on vacation, and then she sent me this picture, and I'm like, oh, okay, you did it, you know. And I'm pretty conservative. I've always been conservative, even through college years. But it was some, I mean, she looked cute, she's pretty, and she's got the face and everything to pull it off. But I remember being absolutely uncomfortable and having to say it's her choice and she can do what she wants to. And, you know, I encouraged her for being, I looked for something to encourage her, and that was I encouraged her for being brave and being obedient to what she felt the Lord was saying. And it was actually a great connector. I mean, going into youth ministry and doing all that she did, it was good. So that is very helpful to have a ground rule of, okay, would I say this to my friend? And if not, then don't say it to your child of 18. And so with friends, you have boundaries, though. So when our kids came back from college, and I think that's such a hard season because they go to college, and college campuses these days are just very liberal, and, you know, they have no curfew or anything like that, and then they come back into your house. So you still have boundaries, though. They don't have to come in and play their music at 2 o'clock in the morning and bring their friends home and have parties and everything. You can still say what the boundaries are, but within reason. I mean, you can't tell them, you know, you've got to be home at 9 o'clock at night because we don't want the dogs barking when you come home. I mean, there's a reasonable part of it. But in any friendship, there's boundaries. So going back to my friendship with Vicky, if we went out for lunch every month and she always just let me pay the bill, that would get to a point of like, you know, this isn't really a friendship. I mean, I'd do it once or twice, but at some point it's like, well, are you ever going to pay for your own food or whatever? You know, there's a boundary there with a friendship. And in that case, I mean, if we said we're going to meet at 1 o'clock and Vicky always came late, which she'd never do, I would, at some point I'd say, listen, if you're going to be late, could you just tell me? Because I plan to be here on time and I've rescheduled everything to make this opportunity to be here. So that's not criticizing. It's just pointing out to her, look, you may not realize I have a very busy day, so when you're 30 minutes late, if you could just tell me, I could run an errand on the way before I got here. So when your kids don't show up for dinner or they, you know, they say they're coming and they don't, you can point out to them, look, I don't mind that you're going to go out with your friends, but it would have been helpful to tell me this morning when I was preparing, especially when you're used to not cooking dinner at night and suddenly you cook it and then they're not there. So, you know, explaining that kind of thing, because once again, you would go through that with your friend. So having boundaries is a healthy situation. And I don't know why people are so scared of not talking about boundaries, because it just brings security and freedom for everybody. So, but be reasonable. I mean, you can say what you want to. And then, as I said, it is a two-way street. So you treat them like a friend and an adult, but then there's an expectation that they are going to act like a friend and an adult. So like our friend Kim, when he was going off to work, he'd tell us, oh, by the way, I'm not going to be home for dinner tonight. I have a meeting or we have a business dinner. And I wouldn't ask him, well, where are you going? Or, you know, why are you eating out when you've got a perfectly good free meal at home? I mean, you wouldn't, you know, we laugh because we wouldn't do it to our friend. I mean, if Vicky and Peyton came to my house and they said, oh, well, we'll come, but we won't be there for dinner, I wouldn't dream of asking her, why aren't you having dinner with me? I would just say, oh, sure, we'll, you know, we can have a cup of coffee when you get here. I wouldn't ask her that. So why do we ask our kids? I mean, especially if they're going out to eat and you know they're supposed to be saving up. I mean, we can think about that, but you don't have to ask them that, because what happens is it adjusts the friendship. And then basically what you're saying to them is, you're a little child, you're an idiot, you don't know how to manage your money, so you shouldn't be making these stupid decisions. So that's a message that you're sending on another level. And you see, because if I respect Vicky, and I mean, if she says she's not going to be there for dinner, I'll assume she would have eaten earlier. She doesn't want to make me wait. She'd rather just have the freedom to get there afterwards. I just assume the best of her. I'm not going to think, oh, she doesn't like my food, and I don't cook as well as that person. And so when your kids say, I'm not going to be there for dinner, don't ask them why. Just say, thank you for letting me know. That was very considerate of you. So it changes the whole process of that. So when you're dealing with your adult child, you need to focus on where they are and where they're going to go. We have a tendency to still see them in the snapshot of them being a very irresponsible teenager. And they may still be acting. That is scary. That is scary, though, because sometimes they're 25 and they're still acting as a irresponsible teenager. But to constantly remind them of that, that makes them constantly do that. And you remind them, and then what happens is, they don't like who they are when they're around you, so they start separating. And that's much more hurtful to us, I think, as moms, when you know they're just making excuses not to come home. And so you need to start seeing, well, this is, you know their giftings, you know who they are, and start treating them like an adult who's going to be maybe a husband or a father, or, you know, who are they going to be in the next 5 to 10 years, and start trying to focus on that, which is a little, I know it's difficult. It's not a little difficult, it's very difficult, because they come home and they've got such immature actions. And then the second thing about dealing with them is just, I mean, choose your battles. Don't get into issues where it's just really not worth it, because, you know, you lose that friendship and you get so excited they're finally coming home for their spring semester, their spring break, or they're coming home for the holidays, and within the first day you have an argument and you're like, oh, you know, I've been so excited, I've missed them so much and they've come home. Why did I choose that topic to lose it with? So we need to think of areas that we can constantly encourage them and love them. And the big thing is we need to accept them where they are and the decisions they're making. Now, I know this is difficult, especially when they're starting to make bad choices about the friends that they're hanging out with and the decisions they're making with their relationships. And often what starts happening when the kids go off to college is that's when some pretty serious relationships are starting. And I've walked through this with so many of my friends where they don't like the girlfriend or they don't like the boyfriend that their kids are getting involved with, and they make it very known to their child. And really what they're doing is they're pushing their own child away, because that child is trying to discover who they are and experimenting. Now, there's a window, once again, if they're coming and saying, hey, I met this girl, and you know, they bring her home, and they're asking your advice, you can really say, well, look, you know, we raised you in the Christian faith, and we really feel like you need to marry somebody. You know, the Bible talks about not being equally yoked. And the fact that this girl is not a Christian really bothers us, because how can you do life together if she's not a Christian? So if they're asking you, you can point those things out. But if you've done a good job of parenting for 18 years, they know exactly what you think about that. So, I mean, my kids know what I think about bad language. They know what I think about swearing and smoking and all that, and, you know, having sex before marriage. We've made it very clear for 18 years at that point what our values are. So to keep pointing it out to them, you know, I don't like the fact that you guys are out drinking on the weekend, and I don't like the fact that you are, you know, spending the night together, or even if you're not having sex, I know you're in her dorm at night. For me to say that, they don't need to hear that, but all it is bridging, I mean, it's separating you from the friendship with them. So you've got to constantly be looking for ways to build a friendship, which is hard, rather than breaking away, because they have all the cards in their hand. If you don't accept their girlfriend or their boyfriend, they're just going to leave and start spending time with her family or his family. And I've seen this happen so many times. And I remember sitting with Dion and me with this couple, and their daughter was going through this exact scenario. And we said, you could be very careful how you say that, because, you know, she's 22 and this is a pretty serious relationship. If it ends in marriage, you're going to lose your daughter, and she's going to, because the boyfriend's family was totally in love with her and just accepting her. And sure enough, I mean, the daughter came home. She didn't want to be at the family for Christmas or Thanksgiving or New Year's, and she just went away. And then this girl, my friend, called me crying. And I'm like, I mean, I didn't tell her, well, I told you so. But, you know, I had to explain to her, you can't say those things and not have an effect. So you can't constantly be criticizing her friendships and then expect her to come back and be with you, because they're the ones that are going to pull them in. I mean, they're used to socializing at college, and so to come home and sit with 60-year-old parents all weekend is not fun. Really. I mean, nobody's going to even pretend that's fun. So, and she also knew that by sitting with her parents all weekend, they were just going to be criticizing the fact that she's being with this guy. And this couple are actually getting married in June, and it's been a really long journey for them to accept and, you know, to be part of that. And so it's a lot of prayer and a lot of apologizing. The parents have actually gone to the daughter and said, look, we're going to accept him and make him our son. Because that is really what you have to do, whether you like it or not. When we told our kids, when you bring a girlfriend or boyfriend home and they want to get married, they will be treated as a son and daughter. So I have three kids that are married, so two new sons-in-laws and a new, one son-in-law and two daughters-in-law. And we just call them our sons and daughters. And they have all the privileges of home. They call me mom. They call Dion dad. And they have the same expectation of being our children. And we had made the decision whether they were going to be Christians, whether they were going to be good partners for our kids or not. And I thank the Lord every day that they are wonderful Christians and they're the best partners for my kids to do. But it's not always the case. And I have a friend who raised their kids in wonderful Christian homes, and three of her kids have got married, and not one of them have married a Christian husband. And it's heartbreaking, but they went through the process. They could see the girl starting to date, and they kind of pointed out some things, but they sat down with the daughter, and she said, I'm in love with him. I want to marry him. And at that point, they said, okay, well, then we're going to accept him. And because of that, they've won the friendship, and they have a great relationship. So it goes against your natural values because you think, well, she can't marry him because he's not a Christian, he hasn't got a degree, all the reasons why you think he shouldn't marry. But the reality is they're going to do that anyway. And the good thing is what you want to do is you want to keep the relationship so they'll come home. So you want to create that acceptance. And you can process with your husband, which I process all the time, and then you process with your girlfriends. And I think that's the team. You know, I always say that parenting is a team sport. And I think especially, I'm so glad you've got this group, and Gail, thank you for doing it, because I think there's such a need for moms to process together. And men, it's good to process with them, but we process in a totally different way. And so when I hear my daughter-in-law doing something to my son, or, you know, I find my kids get up in the morning, make breakfast for their wives, I'm like, oh, where did they learn that? Because Dion didn't do that for me. And I'm like, well, does this ever turn around where she gets up and makes it for him? I mean, you know, I have all these questions. And, you know, I process with Dion, you know, especially when we've gone on vacation together, you observe some of these things and you think, oh, I wonder how this happens, you know. But we'll process together. And what we have learned, though, is that we'll pray over and over again. So we've taken situations where we've seen our kids and we've prayed and we don't say anything to them. It's kind of like this game we play. We watch it, and then a week or two later, we'll see them, and it's just an amazing turnaround of what it is. So if you don't feel comfortable to pray with your husband, or if he's not as excited about praying together, get a girlfriend that can be your partner, because it's really important to have that. But accepting them where they are makes them feel like you're really part of their lives. And, you know, C.S. Lewis says that friendship is about something. And what you may need to do with your adult kids is to find a new form of relationship with them, where you can actually do something with your kids that are not necessarily that you haven't done before. So for girls, you know, maybe you like going shopping, watching movies together, going out for manicures. I think if you offer your daughter from college a free manicure and a lunch, you're pretty much going to get especially if you ask them to bring one of their girlfriends over with them. But when my daughter started dating Jack, who's from Savannah and he's an Auburn fan, he's mad about football, and I really had to get into it because I just had not really ever got into that. But I took a part of it and then I asked him questions and asked him to teach me some things. And I mean, he's quite sweet because I think he thinks I really haven't got the rules, which I haven't. But at least I get excited with him. And then he comes and we watched the championship game together last week. But I think that you have to find something and make an effort to do something, especially if it's a daughter-in-law or a daughter that you don't naturally have anything in common, because that's what friendships, you've got to find friendship about it. So like for me and Vicky, our friendship was about our kids and the fact that we were Christians and we were trying to be better moms. So something has to bind you together. So look for something new that you can do with your kids to make it about that, rather than getting together and checking up, well, how are your grades doing at school, and, you know, are you keeping your car clean, and have you had your oil changed lately? I mean, we tend to want to do that because that's our reference point as being a mom, but you need to find something else. And my girls and I, we love shopping together, we love having tea parties and doing all that kind of thing, and I'm thankful that we've had that. But the biggest thing that our kids are all in ministry, and so we love talking about leadership and opportunities to minister in different areas. So ask the Lord for some new thing to do. And it might be getting out of your comfort zone, especially if it's a son that you want to get into cars or sports or something a little bit unusual. But you've got to show them that you're really interested in their world, because that's what makes a friendship. You've got to stretch yourself just a little bit. And then the big thing is that you can't beat up on yourself. If you see them making decisions that are not what you've raised them in, you have to trust them to just find the path on their own. And I have a friend at the moment, a couple that we are friends with, and their son just decided that he wanted to be a woman. So this has been absolutely horrifying for them. They were raised in a Christian family. He went to Georgia Tech, and then he went on to grade school. And in July, he sent an email to them, and then in just before Thanksgiving, he put it all on Facebook. So it wasn't exactly a secret. But back in March, he started taking all the hormones to change. It was just awful. And so my friends, they sat down with Dion and me, and of course, the first thing they felt was shame. They didn't want to talk about it for a while until they realized it was all on Facebook. So when you find out that your kids have got into something inappropriate, you feel shamed, you feel embarrassed, you feel guilty. What did I do wrong as a parent that they're making that choice? And the reality is probably nothing, because this couple have four boys, the other three are wonderfully happily married and following the Lord, and you know, there's nothing there. That this guy just got lost in his identity, and I mean, we're praying, it might sound a little bit mean, but we're praying that he's going to have a horrible allergic reaction to the medication, and then he'll stop it, because that's pretty serious. I, of course, had never really got into that, but as they've been explaining to us, that's pretty serious medication to be switching your hormones around. And it's not naturally reversible. You have to go back and have surgery, and the suicide rate for those individuals that are going transgender is like 40%. So, because what happens is they get into, they're lost, they don't know who they are. I mean, now they're not really fitting into women, and they're not really fitting into men anymore, and so they're just lost. And so we've been praying with them, praying over the phone, sending text messages with them, trying to just encourage them. Because what I think the enemy tries to tell us is that this is something bad that you've done, and make us go into this terrible feeling of guilt, and then we don't want to talk about it. And so, you know, we are responsible for what we've done, but we can't keep going back and apologizing and beating up on ourselves. And even if you did make mistakes, they are adults now. You know, they can go and make their own choices. And, you know, we do quite a bit of counseling with marriage and, you know, young people. And at some point, they've got to stop blaming their parents. I mean, when you have a 40-year-old still blaming their mom for leaving them when they were 13, yes, it was horrible and you acknowledge the pain, but you can't spend your whole life blaming them. So at some point, you know, they've got to make their own decisions. And as parents, we have to say, well, we did what we could in the circumstances. So even if you weren't Christians when you were raising them and you didn't make those good choices, the Lord's grace can come in and redeem the situation and rescue them beyond your own control. So some other practical things with the communication. I found that even when my kids were in high school, and then especially when they went off to college, the best way I communicated with them was really through text messages and sometimes an email. And when you're sharing something with them, especially if you've been praying and you felt like you had something to share with them, you know, you've got to be careful. Depending on where they are in their spiritual journey, you've got to be careful how you share it, because otherwise it just, oh, there goes mom preaching at me again and, you know, thumping her Bible over me. So we do pray for our kids every morning, and I don't tell them every day we've been praying for them. They know we pray for them, but sometimes I'll just have an urge to send one of them a text and say, hey, you know, Dad and I just finished praying for you for your job interview, or I know you've got this big thing coming up. We're really believing there's going to be a good outcome. And I think that's more of an encouraging thing, because once again, I would do that to Vicky, but I wouldn't be, you know, saying, did you go to the interview and were you on time and did it go well? You know, it would just be, hey, I'm praying for you. So once again, if you would do it to your friend, and I mean, we girls text all the time, so, you know, my kids are used to that. They just know I'm going to be texting. But I've got to be careful the tone of what the text is, that I'm not checking up on them. I'm really just saying, hey, I hope it goes well. And then I'll sometimes say, let me know how it goes. But even that, I'm you know, don't make them feel like they have to give me an up-to-date, you know, rundown of what's going on. So that's a great way of communication. And then a big thing is handling the holidays. So now, when we first came, we got introduced to the wonderful holiday of Thanksgiving. And then, of course, right behind that comes Christmas. And so I remember back in our Neely Farm days and just the craziness of these poor moms packing up their kids, going to grandma's house and then turning around and going to this one. And then Christmas would come and it was all this major packing up and doing all the relatives and the family stuff. And I love family. I'm one of seven kids and I love my family. I think family is a great building society of, you know, building block of society. But I saw so much going on in those days when my kids were younger. And I remember saying, I'm never going to be the parents that make my kids come home. And so even when my kids started dating and, you know, they would, the first time they were not even married and one of them wanted to go somewhere else for Thanksgiving, I'm like, okay, you can go. Of course, it was a thing of, you know, this is our first Thanksgiving without them or whatever it is, and then the first Christmas. But we wanted to be the easy parents. And so we always said to our kids, you go wherever you want to, and then just let us know. And so for Thanksgiving, we always go down to Hilton Head, because when we first came here, we didn't have any family, and so it was a little bit sad for my kids because they had no aunts and uncles and everybody coming, and because our school's closed for a week, it was a great time to get away, and we discovered Hilton Head, and we've been going there for about 18 years. So when our kids started dating and getting married, we said, if you're coming, let me know. We just rent a house. So let me know if you're coming. We'll do 3 or 4 or 5 bedrooms, whatever it is. And they know the invitation's there, but if they decide to not come, then that's also just, they don't have to give an explanation. And so our firstborn married a firstborn in her family, and they feel like everything has to be fair. So, you know, she wants to do it alternating every Thanksgiving. And I've released, I said, Lindsay, do whatever you want to do. Her parents live in North Carolina. So I've said, you go there every Thanksgiving because we see you all the time. But they're both rule followers. But then they decided that Christmas, they're going to go away. So the last 3 Christmases, they went to Cancun, and then they went to Charleston, and last year they went down to the beach. And so I'm like, okay, well, none of us are getting you. I never told them that, but I remember saying to Dion, that's really weird. They're not coming to anybody. But, you know, their companies closed. It was a free week to get away, so it made sense. And so they've told us until they have kids, they're not going to be at any Christmases. So that was pretty sad, but it's fine. I mean, so I process with Dion, and of course I'm going through all the mommy thing. You know, what are we going to do on Christmas morning? And, you know, we're not going to be able to give them their gifts. But this year, it ended up we only had my daughter and her husband and then our 18-year-old. And so I sent out a text and I said, okay, let's just take everything off the calendar, I mean the table. Why don't we just do Christmas on the Friday night? And they all happened to be open, so they all came over. We did dinner at our house and exchanged gifts. Had a wonderful time. It was very relaxed. And then Saturday and Sunday, Monday, they all started going and doing the different things. And I just said to Dion, you know, actually, this is a mature thing to do. It doesn't have to be on the 25th of December. And sometimes we've done it on the 1st of January or whatever. We've done, in the last, you know, 6 years of doing this, it's been a variety. So there's no right or wrong way, but what is right is that you have to release them to go. Because I also didn't want my kids sitting around the table feeling like they had to check off that box. They had to be at mom-in-law's house, you know. So we've let them be very relaxed about that. And even, you know, New Year's Eve, Dion's birthday is on January 1st, so what they've kind of done over the last few years is they end up at our house on the 1st in the evening, and we do a great time of just sharing testimonies and, you know, celebrating Dion. So that's kind of worked out. This year we ended up doing it on the 4th because we couldn't do it on the 1st. And so you have to hold those kind of things loosely because that can just become pressurized. And so as it happens, I mean, we've ended up having, you know, somebody with us every Christmas. And now I know my daughter's pregnant, so May, the baby, the first grandchild comes. So who knows what's going to happen with the grandchildren. That's a different story. But you have to just hold it just very, very much like, well, we'd love you to come over, you know, whatever. If you're going away, you book a room for them. But if not, don't put any explanation. Now, you can burst into tears as soon as you're off the phone to your husband or you call your friend and say, my daughter's not coming home for the first time, and process it with them. But they need to really feel like when you say, oh, you can do whatever you want to, that you really mean it. And there's no little manipulation on the side or whatever. And so there's ways of doing it. I have a friend they took Christmas and Thanksgiving right out of November and December, and they spend a week together in summer. They go down to St. George Island, I think it's one of those islands. And they just have a great, she said, we're booking a house, and anybody who can come, the cousins and the uncles and aunts, everybody together. And then they do what they want to do on Thanksgiving and Christmas. So, you know, we tend to get so caught up in the actual day of the Thursday has to be Thanksgiving meal and the whole thing. And so be creative and be the one that's going to make it easy for them and say, look, you know, you do what you want to do. We'll fit in around whatever works with your schedule and the other family or whatever the in-laws are, and take a chance with that. So when the other thing is if you want to do family meals, so we started by doing every second Monday night we did leadership development in a meal, because we're very focused on leadership and just passionate about keeping that motivated in our kids. And so we tried it every second Monday, and it just got busy with their schedule and traffic, and we moved it over to once a month. So once a month we have an evening, we talk about leadership, or Dion does some business development with them, and then I'll cook a meal. And they know it's there. The only thing is they just need to let me know if they're coming or not coming. And they often will just say, sorry, we can't make it this week. You know, fine. And they don't have to give an explanation. They just need to be polite so that I'm not cooking for 9 people instead of 7, you know, whatever the situation is. So I think family meals are great if you can do it. But when you say come if you want to or come if you can, you really mean that. And there's no manipulation. If they're not going to come, what's the excuse going to be? So I have friends who do that once a week with their kids. Every Thursday night is family meal. They live fairly close by, and it's a great time to connect in a very intentional way. But don't put any manipulation in there. You know, don't say, oh, well, you haven't been here for the last three Thursdays. Don't you like coming anymore? I mean, you know, once again, if I did that with Vicky and if I invited her and she didn't say no, I wouldn't start saying, well, don't you like my food or is it too far to travel or what's the deal? I'd just say, oh, fine, let's make it next month or whatever it is. So I want to get into some ways that we can pray for our children. And I know Stormy Amardian has got a great book on praying for your kids. I think, I don't know if she's got it for adult kids, but I know she's definitely got it for children. And sometimes you're so desperate about your kids, you don't even know what to pray because they're just totally driving you mad. Or it's just like, how can they make these dumb decisions and they know better than that? So sometimes I think just praying a written prayer is very helpful. But what I found is if you ask the Lord, what does he love about your child? Because he created that child and he knows that child intricately. And sometimes praying that over your child is a little bit more productive than just crying and shouting out your frustrations about your child. And so think, and then if the Lord starts telling you, as soon as the Lord starts telling you things that he loves about the child, you can start thinking, well, what did I love about the child? You know, and think about what they were like when they were in middle school or high school or some of the characteristics. And then start praying those into reality and saying, well, I know he's got a good heart. And even though he's being selfish at the moment, we know that he's got this heart that can be kind. And, you know, he's had good friendships in the past and he's made good choices in the past. And then out of those prayer times, it's good to maybe sometimes send something to that person, that child, and say, you know, I love the fact that you've got such a servant heart that you're the first person to offer to help your friends when they're in need. Now, that is not necessarily a spiritual thing, but you're encouraging them something positive because you've got to look for some positive connection. You don't want any friendship to be driven by the negative. So you've got to think of something positive, and, you know, sometimes it's really difficult to find some positive things. So think of some positive things, and then, you know, try and figure out why are they making these choices? Why are they that unhappy? Or when they call you, why are they rude to you on the phone? I mean, is there something that you're being to them that makes them feel like that? And often what happens is when they call home, they get put back into that little child mode, and they're trying so hard to be the big adult at college or the big adult in their new work environment. And so what we need to do is we need to start seeing them in a more adult position, and then they'll start acting like that, and you can encourage them with that. And praying scriptures over them. There's a lovely scripture in Ezekiel where, you know, they say that you're breathing life into these dead bones, and sometimes your kids may look like they just have no life in them. And it's, you know, you can bring life into the situation by just praying over them and speaking to them. And once again, get a girlfriend that can pray with you. Husbands is the best choice because you pray and there's a power in prayer of a husband and a wife who are one. But from a practical point of view, sometimes it's just a mom or a girlfriend that can sit there crying with you and really gets the heart of what a mom's going through. Because men can detach themselves and like, well, he's gone to college, he's making dumb decisions, that's his fault. But we're the ones that are just going through the emotions of what's going through with that. So we had some of the situations I had. Our daughter-in-law is a music therapist. She's graduated from UGA. And last year, she slammed her finger in a door and it nipped the top of her finger off. And because she's a musician, she couldn't play. I mean, her classes are playing the piano and the guitar and the ukulele. And so she was absolutely devastated. Plus, this happened on a Friday night and her birthday was on a Monday and she just turned 26. And you know, with the medical insurance, you can't be on your parents' insurance. And of course, they'd spoken to her, and Ross, my son, had spoken about getting into insurance, but between them, they had just kind of let it fall. So here she was on the Friday night, head into the emergency room with no insurance. And they'd desperately been trying to save up to work on a down payment for a house. So finally, I didn't even hear about it, except my other son at home got to text, or because they were going to get together, and he said, oh, by the way, I can't come, I'm headed to the emergency room. Nobody thinks of telling mom, but anyway, it's probably good that I didn't know. And so by the time I did know, I mean, she didn't lose the finger, but it was very painful and everything. And so the next morning, I finally got hold of Ross, and I said, I'm so sorry, you know, is there anything we can do to help? And he said, oh, no, we're fine, we're just trying to work out the financial, because, and then everything figured out. Oh, my gosh, they had to pay out of pocket. So I said to Dion, oh, I think we should offer to pay. Or let's just give them something towards it. Because, I mean, anybody's done any medical, the emergency room and all the stuff. And they had surgery scheduled for Tuesday to put a pin in. And then she was going to, I mean, it was like a month or 3 months of therapy. And I just started seeing all this dollar thing. So I said to Dion, I think we should just give them something. I mean, not that we just have it, you know, money flowing around. But I'm just like, we definitely have more than they do. I mean, they both had jobs and everything. So it wasn't like they're on the street. And Dion said, well, let's wait and see if they ask, which, of course, I knew Ross would never ask. But anyway, but I went and I walked away, and I'm like, oh, I feel so bad. I mean, I felt bad for Jordan for her finger and her whole working. She was stuck about what she was going to do the next while. And I felt like the Lord said to me, as if you're standing in, he said, watch this. I want to give them their own story of trusting me. So I'm like, okay, I can do this. And so I came back and I said to Dion, we just got to make this a matter of prayer. And so I took a meal round, and, you know, then when she had surgery, her mom was with her in the morning. I went in the evening too. So we kind of did the friend thing, which was very much in its boundaries. And I never told them we were praying for the finances. I just said, look, you know, anything we can do, we'll help you. And because it hadn't happened while she was teaching a child, there was a whole thing of whether she was going to get workers' compensation and disability and all the rest of it. And her boss said, look, you weren't in a work situation. She was at a conference, and so it was kind of work-related, so it was a bit complicated. But the insurance had pretty much said, you're not going to get workers' compensation, and you're not getting disability. You're going to have to pay everything. So I'm like, well, I know, because I've worked with, you know, salaries. My husband runs several companies. But we just carried on praying. And within about 2 weeks, they got a letter from the workers' compensation to say everything was going to get paid. And even though she was allowed, she could do some work because she couldn't play, but she could do something. They gave her disability for a whole month, for 30 days. And so she ended up getting actually more than she even needed. And she got up at our church and she said, shared this testimony, and I nudged Dion. I said, I know what, I was part of that. It was something that I was actually, you know, praying for every day. And that was so much more meaningful to me. And I didn't feel like I was robbing Jordan and Ross of being their own thing. And of course, it was one of the first crises that I actually had together as a young married couple. Because these days, kids need a crisis. I mean, they need to get a bit of power where they can do something. But life is so easy for them. So it was really good for them to put their power together. And they were praying, and they were trying to battle through this together. So that is a testimony. And then another testimony on our friend's son has been in rehab 3 times because of drugs. So he's 22 years old, just a mess. I mean, it's been so sad. And they never stopped praying. I mean, Dion and I went every Sunday afternoon for an hour. We went and prayed with them. I didn't even know. You know, you get to the point you don't know what to say anymore. Because what do you say? I mean, you know, how can he not know he should just stop taking drugs? He's so messing up his life. And he ended up on the street because they had a situation. They said to him, you can stay in our house as long as you're not using. And, you know, they'd give him a test. And if they found that he had drugs in his system, they literally packed his bags and put him outside, which was just awful. But they felt they couldn't continue to just enable him. And he ended up getting his girlfriend pregnant, and so there's a whole scenario going on with that anyway. But about 3 months ago, he just came to the house and he said, I'm done. He said, whatever it takes, I'm ready to give up. And he has now turned his life around. He's not back at church yet, but he's completely sober, and he's got a job, and he's reconciled with his little daughter and everything. So we know that it took a lot. I mean, it's been a long road of about 5 years of praying, but for the first time, he actually has acknowledged, because every other time, they actually had to take him to rehab, but now he's coming through. And another one of my girlfriends, they once also very much are raised in a Christian home, and their daughter decided that she wanted to move in with her girlfriend and have a homosexual lesbian relationship. And, of course, it was just devastating for my friend. And we encouraged them to just love her and accept her. And she lived with her girlfriend for about 4 years. So that's a long journey. I mean, that's a long time of watching her making mistakes like that. And one day she just knocked on their front door and she said, I'm home. And they were like, well, what do you mean? And they said, I'm done with that. I'm repenting of that. And she just came home and she's ended up, that's happened about 2 years ago. She's married to a guy and just had a lovely baby and completely free of that. So I know the pain of going through those situations. I haven't personally, but I've sat through with my friends crying and even the husbands crying over their kids and their situations. But there is power in prayer. And, you know, having somebody come alongside you like that can truly get you through seeing everything on the negative situation and trying to take your eyes up into a more positive environment and seeing, okay, what could this situation look like if the Lord changed the situation? And as I said, when you talk to your kids, you need to be careful of not preaching to them, because it breaks a friendship. So you keep the communication in context of what they can handle. And so you can be praying every single day, and you can have your prayer warriors around you, and your husband and your girlfriends, everybody. But let them know that you love them and you accept them no matter what their choices are. And so I think that, you know, I know that I know some of you might be in difficult situations at the moment. And so I want to give you an opportunity to ask questions, and then I'd like us to go into circles, or if we can kind of make some groups and maybe just pray more specifically for each other and share something. But I'm very happy to open questions. I'll try and answer what I can. Okay, I wasn't that good. You must have some questions. I mean, you don't have to talk about your child or kind of a situation. I know it's a little bit personal what you're going through. Yes? Well, with married kids or... Sure. Well, once again, you make the offer. I think that... Did our mum... Can you hear me? You make the offer, and you can say, well, we're going down to the beach. We'd love you to join us, but feel free to come if you want to. If not, just let us know so you can do the practicalities of joining, you know, booking a house or room, whatever you're doing. But there's always got to come with the freedom of they can say no. Oh, when you're over there... Yes, I think, when we've done it now for several years at Thanksgiving, we keep it very loose. And so I think you have to give them the freedom that they can eat whenever they want to. We normally say, look, let's go out for dinner over there on, you know, Tuesday night. We kind of plan out the week of Thanksgiving. I generally take care of all the food beforehand or while we're there, because they're all working, so it's a kind of a way for me to bless them. And it's not that I'm trying to control it. I just like it to, it's something that's taken care of. And then we have different places on Hilton Head that we like to eat as a family, and we go to the outlet more once to do shopping. So we kind of have kind of traditions there. But even though we used to do them when they were little and they loved it, we go play putt-putt one day and then we go to the outlet mall and go to the seafood restaurant. Now that they've got adults, we said, hey, we're still going to go with Luke, or Dad and I are going to go. Does anybody want to come with us? So it just kind of changes that thing. The other thing is that we never do times for breakfast, or because, you know, their big thing is to sleep late. I can't sleep after 6:30. So I've already, you know, gone for a walk on the beach, had a quiet time, had breakfast, you know, had my morning thing ready for lunch, and they're still sleeping. And I've had to just think, well, that's their, you know, that's how they relax. And so not moaning that they're still sleeping when, you know, I'm ready for lunch. Now they're wanting to get up, and now they're trying to make eggs, and I'm really trying to plan the afternoon activities. I had to go through some adjustment because it's just inconvenient, but I just get up, do my own breakfast. If Dion's awake, we'll do it or whatever. And we kind of let each person go on their own thing. And then the evenings, you know, it kind of naturally ends that we're watching a movie together or we're going out. But if they say, hey, well, we're going to go and watch this movie, we're going over here, there's no explanation. And I think depending on who and how the paying happens, that can get sensitive. I think you can say, look, we're going to pay for the house, and, you know, if you want to contribute to the meals or whatever it is, you don't just assume that you're going to do everything, especially depending on your financial situation. But once again, I mean, if I invited Vicky and Peyton to come away from us, there's no ways they would just expect a full paid vacation. She'd say, well, can we contribute? Oh, I'm sure you would. Well, can I contribute to the thing? Or, hey, let us bring some food, because that's what mature adults do. So if they're still in college, obviously that kind of goes more of a you're paying for it, but they can still do chores. And you see, this is the other thing. When your kids come back home, you say, okay, now there's five adults living in the home. We're going to share the responsibilities of running this. It's not so we always have this discussion where Dion will say, look, it's not fair that mom takes care of all the laundry and all the dishes and all the trash. So, you know, Ross, while you're at home from college, the trash is your responsibility, keeping the cars cleaned. And, you know, Bruce, you can take care of this. And so we kind of have a summer, or whatever the summer plans used to be. And then when they came home for Thanksgiving and Christmas, you have some kind of work jobs that are going to happen. Not so much because you really physically need the help, but it's good that they contribute, because that's just what adults do. None of us would go to a girlfriend's house and just expect her to keep serving us and then, you know, washing the dishes and, oh, by the way, my laundry needs cleaning. You know, there's this thing where, and there's, in that case, there's nothing wrong after a while to point it out to them. You know, like, you just say, you know, it's been a week now and every morning your dishes are sitting in the sink. Would you mind just, you know, this is a work, I have friends coming for morning Bible study. It would be really nice if you could just be aware that other things are happening in the house. So I think, does that answer your question about holidays? I think, you know, but also before you go, it's very good to set the boundaries and the expectations, because otherwise you get into the middle of the vacation. You as a mom are thinking, oh, this is going to be a fun family vacation. We're all going to play games and we're going to go to watch movies. And then all they're doing is sleeping. And when they finally wake up, they want to go and do their own thing. Or they found there's other friends down there and then they want to go off with their friends. And that often happens, you know, especially if it's, you know, like in Destin or in, you know, Hilton Head or somewhere close by, they very likely bump into another family. And so you've got to set your expectations that even if it's just you and your husband are going to have your meals together and go for walks on the beach, that's okay. It's just nice to at least know that the family's around. And because you can't tell them as an adult what they're going to do. I mean, if Vicky and Peyton came on vacation and I told that Peyton, you need to be up at 8 o'clock because that's when I'm cooking breakfast, I can guarantee he'll never want to come away with us again. You know, because nobody wants to be told what to do and when to eat and, you know, how long the breakfast is going to last. And so sometimes I'll say, hey, tomorrow morning I'm going to make some breakfast casseroles. I'll have them ready at 9, so if you want them, they're there. Otherwise, you can heat it up when you wake up, you know. So I'll offer it, but it's not like, well, you need to be there because I'm not going to have the food getting cold, you know. So I think there's a way you can set the boundaries, but you don't have to, be treated like a servant. So the more tricky question which I've had is if your son or girlfriend, I mean daughter, is dating somebody and you know that they're living together or sleeping together and they want to come with you, do you let them share a room? I don't know what if any of you have had that, but I mean, I think absolutely not in my world, but if they were to come home, I mean, this hasn't happened to us, but I mean, I know several of my friends have had this question. So the daughter comes home and her boyfriend's coming, and you know, you just tell her, you're welcome to bring your boyfriend, but I'm preparing the guest room for him and your room's always ready. Because in your home, you have authority over your home, and even if you're going on a vacation, even if you need to get another room, another hotel room, or if you need to get a 5-bedroom home instead of a 4-bedroom home, that is your boundary that you can set. And you have to be prepared for her to say, well, then I'm not coming, because that's okay. As much as that hurts, you can't, I'm assuming that is what your standard would be, that you'd prefer them not to be together. Now, you know that they're sleeping together in their dorm room, I mean, because these days that's just so acceptable. But if you just feel like that's not something that's allowed in your home, especially if you, you know, especially if you have younger kids, then it gets really complicated. But, you know, if you're okay with it, you know, we sometimes judge certain sins as different bad level of badness than we want to. So that isn't the unforgivable sin. So it may be that you say, well, look, you know, if that's what you want, I would prefer you not to, but we'd rather have you on vacation with us. And so sometimes in the moment, you have to be a little bit more flexible. But in our house, I mean, that would not happen in our house. That would just be a very much of a closed boundary for us. So my girlfriend had her daughter wanting to bring her girlfriend, and so that got terribly complicated. So but you know, you have to raise your be with the kids like you want to be, and what your conscience allows you to do is what you need to do. So I can't say you can never let your daughter have a boyfriend in her bedroom, because that's your conscience. I mean, then we have to respect that with one another. So any other questions? Yes. Yes, definitely the parenting. Yeah. Well, we normally talk it until we agree. And it's oftentimes we're not seeing each other's perspective. But normally it's me that's being more emotional about it and not wanting to see the other side of it. But it's, you know, that's why the Lord gives us a husband and a wife, is a team parenting. Because, you know, he's got the strict side sometimes, and then, you know, I've got the more gentle side. And sometimes it changes around. When it came to my daughter, my husband would often be a little bit more gentle than I would want it to be. And so but that's teamwork, you know. And if you don't have that kind of relationship with your husband, or if you're single, that's when the Lord gives you the body of Christ, where you can get a girlfriend to process with, or go to a youth pastor or student ministry pastor or some. You know, it's good if you have a son, you sometimes need to process with a man, and that's what the body of Christ is there for, you know. So, but you have to find agreement, and you've got to basically talk it through until you can find agreement, I think. So, do you have any specific example, or you don't have to share? Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, the situation is that maybe, you know, some of us have maybe slept with our boyfriends before we were married, and so now we're criticizing our kids, and that's pretty normal. But I think it has to be what you feel comfortable with. And I mean, I think that, you know, what the son is really doing is being disrespectful to your value system or your. Sorry. The trip. Oh, just as a child. Oh, without a. Oh. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I don't think you can require it, but you could definitely offer. You know, like a friend, you can say, "Well, we'd like you to come with us. We have space at our house that we're renting, but I think it's whether you make them feel like they have to come with you." That's hard when it comes to the holidays, because you want your kids around and your family. But, and I mean, even with this thing of letting our kids not come on Thanksgiving and Christmas, we had to talk it through. And it was when it got to this point where Dion said, "Do you really want them to sit around your table feeling that they have to be there?" And I'm like, "Actually, I don't. I'd rather them come another night when we can just have a fun family get together." But, you know, it's, and I mean, I've never felt that they did want to sit there and kind of check it off. "Okay, now we've done that. Can we go to my own mom?" You know, whatever. But, I think Dion, he helped me to reason why his big picture. And he said, you know, they may not come now, but at the, you know, later on they'll want to come. And so you're kind of investing in the trust and allowing them to do what they want to do. So I remember the very first time when Ross was at UGA, and we had always had this fun New Year's Eve celebration. Because it's Dion's birthday, January 1st, we'd do a party, even when the kids were little, we do this big party going into his birthday and New Year's and everything together. And the first year Ross was a freshman, he said, "Oh, I'm not going to be there for New Year's Eve." And I'm like, "What? You know, you don't understand it." And immediately I just said, "Okay, that's great." You know, and I'm like, you know, you start thinking of wonder what they're all going to be doing at midnight and, you know, all the driving around and everything. And I mean, he's never come back for the New Year's Eve celebration with us. It's always been with his friends and then his girlfriend and then his wife and her family. And, you know, I've just let it go because I don't want him coming and sitting there because he has to. I never want to do that. So it's that you can ask them, but you can never require them. There's a bit of a subtlety there, I think. So any other questions or scenarios that you've had? So, yes. Yes, definitely, yeah. It's very much holding them with open hands. And so I think, you know, society says you're not your child's friend, you're their parent, and I 100% agree with that. We do have to parent them when they're little. And I think that's what the confusion comes when they go over to being adults. You have to be their friends. But, you know, they're always the Lord's. And so you have to, at some, you know, you just got to trust the Lord that he's going to take care of them. And I think parents, you know, just watching my daughter and her husband going through this becoming parents in the next few months, they have no idea what's coming, you know, at all. I mean, not even the physical, the pain, or the just. And you know, my son-in-law Jack keeps saying, "Oh, Mom, nothing's going to change." And I'm like, okay, I say nothing because I don't want to tell him how difficult it's going to be. Of course, he'll experience all the joy, but you know. He just keeps saying, "But Mom, nothing's going to change." I mean, he must have told me that 3 or 4 times a week ever since they found out they're pregnant. And what can I say? I mean, I don't want to build this, make them realize, no, your whole world's going to change. I mean, it's never going to be the same. Because even when they do go, you're still going to be worrying. And that's a little girl, so he's definitely going to be worrying about his daughter. But why would I go and tell them that? He has to experience some of that for himself, you know. And I know we're going to laugh and he's going to turn around and say, Mom, I had no idea. But, you know, rather let him discover that and get to that. But that's we have to let them go through that journey on their own. So I had a lady at this Tuesday morning Bible study I went to. Her son was in a fraternity at UGA, and he was really, really sick, and he wanted to go away for a weekend with a fraternity on a bus. I think they were going to New Orleans. And so he called and told her, and of course, what did she say? Oh, you really shouldn't go. But then she realized that that wasn't going to make any difference. So he gets there Friday night, like 1 o'clock in the morning, and then Saturday morning he woke up. I mean, I don't think they slept. Saturday morning or like lunchtime, he calls her. Mom, I'm so sick, can you please fly me home? And so she said no, because she's like, she didn't tell him that because she basically was saying, you made a dumb decision. You now have to make the consequences. So she made him stay there the whole weekend and come back on the bus all through Sunday night and go to college on the Monday morning. But she said at some point he had to make decisions that wasn't a good idea. By her just sending him a ticket and flying him back, that he was going to make the next decision. Oh, Mom and Dad will be there to rescue me out of that. And so those are the hardest. I mean, that wasn't that hard. Obviously, if he had been in a car wreck or something had happened, then it's a totally different story. But if your kids keep making bad decisions by your stepping in, you're just enabling it, and at some point that's going to have to end. And rather in a situation like that, then, it's much more critical. So any other questions? Okay. Yeah, that is true. Definitely, yeah. I think that, and we, the problem with moms are enablers. We naturally are protectors and shepherding. And so at some point, we just got to make those hard decisions to let them make that. And that's when you really start praying that the Lord will protect them, that they won't get into really serious trouble, but that in the process they can learn and make a better decision. So if you can get into a group, I don't know, do you have any specific groups or can they just go around the table? Okay, I'd love you to just maybe share maybe something practical, and you don't have to, everybody doesn't have to share. If you're not comfortable, that's fine. But maybe if you can, in a smaller group, share one or two things that have really helped you in relating to your adult kids. Maybe you've figured out a really good way of communicating with them, or maybe you've figured out how to handle the holidays, especially if you've got married kids and grandchildren. That's a great thing. And then if you can, spend some time maybe just praying for each other. If you're comfortable to share a specific need, then you can pray together. But I'll give you about 10 minutes, and then at about 8:30, I'll just close for us in prayer, or Gail can close in prayer. Okay, so just get into your situation. Okay, thanks. Okay, I'm glad you're all having fun talking, but I'd like us just to close. I want to be sensitive to the time because apparently the roads are going to start freezing again, so we're going to get out of here. But thank you for making the effort to come, and I really appreciate you listening to me. And the fact that you're even here tonight shows that you're concerned about that. So I hope that you've got some things that you can go home and apply. And I was just reminding our group there that I maybe forgot to say earlier, but you've got to make sure that your home is always a safe place that your kids can come back to. So no matter how bad their world is, they need to know, like the prodigal son, that even no matter how many bad choices they've made, there's always a safe place, there's always going to be a bed and a warm home and love and acceptance. And I know that's difficult when your kids are making one bad decision, especially if they're being rude to you and dishonoring, but that's where you've got to ask the Lord to give you the grace just to step in and be loving to them and make them, that might be their road back to recovery. So I'd like to just close in prayer for us. Father, we thank you for your goodness, and we thank you that you are a rescuer and that you are the redeemer. And we thank you for these ladies that took time out of their schedule to come and take note and learn to be a better parent of the adult kids and to develop new relationships with them. And so we pray that as we all leave tonight, that you'd keep us safe on the roads, and we pray that we will learn to look for new opportunities with our kids, to be their friends and to become their prayer partners. And we thank you for girlfriends that can stand in this gap with us and pray for our children. So I speak peace and blessing over every one of the families represented here. And we pray for those difficult situations that just seem so lost, and those children that are not following you. We just pray that you'll bring them back into your kingdom, and that you'll use these mothers and parents to show your love to their children, that they'll make good choices and come back into your kingdom. In Jesus' name, amen.